quite often people will rush into partnerships and not really talk about the what ifs, which is what lawyers excel at, right? But there are a lot of ways in which partnerships can go wrong. And in fact, 70% of business partnerships fail, which are not really good odds.
Welcome to the Anthropology Podcast. I'm your host, Megan Walker. As a former naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I align the intersection of personal performance, purpose, and innovative thinking in badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. Anthropology is the study and science of what makes an entrepreneur think, feel, and perform in a path compelled by a vision for helping others, solving problems, while building a life on your own terms. Together, we are exploring the health, mindset, and strategies that distinguish the world's best entrepreneurs. This is the Anthropology Podcast. Welcome to the Anthropology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. So you probably never put these two concepts together in the same idea, and that is a lawyer and self-care. But that is exactly the two concepts that we are bringing together in my conversation today with my friend Andrea Henry. Andrea is a lawyer and entrepreneur. She leads her own firm, and she shares a little bit about her own story and what drove her to really create her own path as it pertains to how she's going to build a career in the legal system, how she's going to build a small business on her own, and the type of impact that she wants to have for small business owners. We talk about all of the biggest mistakes that we see small business owners make, but in particular, one of them is choosing not to invest in the type of advice that can actually save them heartache and stress down the road. Andrea is approachable, she is intelligent, and she is someone that I have turned to for years and send my clients to consistently. I'm super excited to introduce you to Andrea Henry. Andrea Henry, welcome to the Anthropology Podcast.
Thank you so much, Megan. Happy to be here.
Well, this is going to be a really fun day because we were just laughing about some of the stuff that we are going to unpack today. You're a lawyer. We're talking about law. But before we were like, oh, gosh, I don't want to talk about law. I want you to understand that where we're going to go in this conversation is we're not only going to talk about how you have actually scaled a legal practice. And I really want people to listen to this because there's so many professions where it's like, oh, I got to do it one to one. How do I scale that? So we're going to talk about how you scaled it. We're also going to talk about, wait for it, everyone, how you find balance and engage in self-care through the help of a lawyer. I know nobody saw that one coming, and we're going to jump into it. Andrea, before we do, I'm hoping that you can share with everyone a little bit about your story. Why this balance and this approach to how you run your legal practice and how you've scaled your legal practice is so important to you, and how you got to this point in your career.
Sure. So as you said, it's not usually what you expect to hear from a lawyer. But this lawyer, and the reason why I'm so happy to be on your podcast, and the reason why I have a soft spot for healthcare practitioners, particularly naturopaths, is because in 2018, I got a stage 2 breast cancer diagnosis at the ripe old age of 37 with no family history. And I really took it as kind of a wake-up call because I've been running my practice as I saw everyone else running theirs, which is working all the hours that were available, not taking time to exercise, not taking time to eat well, not taking time to rest and to sleep. Like, I routinely went on, you know, 4 or 5 hours of sleep for years at a time while raising 3 kids. And so I really took it as a wake-up call to look after myself. And my question became, well, how? I still have my ambitions. I still want to grow this really thriving practice. How do I do it in a way that I don't kill myself, right? How do I do it in a way that I can still enjoy life and can still take care of myself and be there for my family, but build this kick-ass firm? And so that's been my question, that's kind of lens through which I make every decision from there on out. And what I use what I know, right? So I know the law, and I was like, well, how can I use what I know in the law to leverage the assets that I have so that I can make more money while spending less time. That's why I'm here.
I really love that. And I want to just point out for, and I'm just going to call it the female entrepreneurs in the crowd, because I do feel like we have a sensitivity to wanting to achieve this balance in our life in a different way. And it's certainly not to say men don't want that, but I do feel like we have a different sensitivity to it at times and at phases in our life and probably earlier in our lives. And I really kind of want to unpack this a little bit, Andrea, because I find I interact with a lot of professionals and in this case, medical practitioners who are like, listen, I really love that you're doing this coaching program, but it's not for me because I actually want balance in my life. And I think, right, which is funny because for them, balance in their life means I've got this hobby and I'm not particularly financially successful at it. But to be financially successful means I'm going to give up all of those other pieces. And I'm actually just hoping that we can put that myth to bed right now.
Absolutely.
Because you've been able to scale it. And I don't want people also to go, oh, well, she's a lawyer. That's different. Because it's not. Mm-hmm. I want people to understand that the model that you have used and the philosophy that you have used to grow your practice is universally applicable. Can you just share a little bit about what that scale journey looks like?
Sure. So it's funny that you say that, like, it's a lawyer. So, of course, absolutely not. In this profession, the expectation is that you're going to work crazy hours. Just as a little background, 50% of the people who graduate from law school are women. And 10 years, like if you look 10 years into the career, it's like 30%. So tons of people drop off because traditionally the practice of law has been incompatible with having a family. But for me, it has been about, as far as I can see, and I'm really open to any other suggestions, but as far as I can see, the only way that you can grow a business and make more money with less time is by leveraging systems, assets, and team.
Agreed.
And so I just really focused on that. Put in really clear systems in place so that the business, I'm constantly trying to tweak and improve. My ideal thing is that the business could run largely without me. We're not there yet, but in order to scale, you have to take yourself out of the business to some extent, or you have to take yourself kind of above the business so that you're managing and your responsibility is for coming up with the ideas and the vision. And then you use systems, you hire good people, and you leverage your intellectual property assets and other assets to create things that work without you having to exchange time for money. And so that's what that scaling process has looked for me. And whenever I have to make a decision about whether I'm going to do something or not, there are still things that I do one-to-one because I love them, right? And I want to do them. I'm making a conscious choice. This is something that I enjoy doing. And so there are going to be a certain number of clients that I work with one-on-one. But it's from a choice point of view as opposed to necessity. And everything new that I'm doing, the question is always, how do I set up a system? Who do I need to hire? What can I leverage that I already have to make this work and to make this successful without me having to put in a ton of additional time?
How did you manage? I love all of that. So how did you manage then people who are calling up your firm and saying, well, I only want to work with Andrea?
Yeah, so that's an interesting conversation sometimes. And some of it is just, look, this is the ideal type of client I like to work with on these particular things. And there's only so many people that I can give that energy to at a time. And so sometimes it's a matter of there's a wait list, right? And I'll work with you, but not right now. Sometimes it's a matter of this is how I can help you in the short term. And then we can work together in a deeper capacity at another date. But really what I've been trying to do is to make sure that when I'm retaining people to work on the team, that they really are a culture fit. And that, I'll be honest, the toughest part of the scaling journey for me has been team, has been finding people that are a good fit, not just technically, not just like good at doing the work, but a good culture fit and people that I can trust to interact with my clients in the same manner than I would. So that's what I'm that's what I'm working on. That's the thing that I'm grappling with the most. But that's the intention, to have people who my clients feel comfortable working with because I've trained them effectively. They've got the right approach towards clients, and I feel comfortable allowing them to work with clients directly.
How much of your time is spent actually working with clients at this point, as opposed to working on the scalability of your practice?
That's a good question. So I work roughly like maybe 35 hours a week, more 30 than 35. I'd say maybe five to 7 hours directly with a core group of clients. And the rest of the time is managing the team, it's managing the systems, and I'm still doing business development.
Right, because that part never stops. So, yeah. You know, as we start to transition, we're looking at an individual's business. And as we were talking mm-hmm. about before we jumped on this call, this idea of, okay, how do we leverage the law so that we have more freedom within yeah. our lives? I think for a lot of people, they're like, I don't know what I don't know about what you just said. And so, right, it's a matter of like, I couldn't even begin to brainstorm how working with a lawyer would actually free up capacity within my life. Can you give some examples of what that looks like so that we can start to unpack this for people?
Sure. So people who are coaches and consultants and in that space have a lot of valuable content, right? Whether it's like the free content that you've been putting out, whether it's guides, whether it's courses or workshops. So I've worked with clients where it's like, look, this is information that you have been kind of putting out in drips and drabs for free, or people have been asking you to come and give presentations. What if we actually leverage that content and put it together in a way that people would pay for it? You've already created it, like you've done the hard part. What can we use? So for some clients, it's been licensing their content. Right? People want to use it as part of their own programs, or they want to present it to their teams. So it's a matter of saying, okay, this is the content that's available. I'm going to package it in a way that's palatable for your audience. And then either you're going to pay a flat fee, or you're going to pay me a percentage whenever you use my content. That's a way, an easy way to leverage without you doing anything additional, because you've already created it. And it could be that, for example, if you're doing a presentation to corporate, and you know, we've had negotiations with corporate sponsors where they want to pay for a speech, but then they also want to provide it to other areas of the business. And so the question is, well, what are you paying for that? Would you like to use this? Would you like us to create a workbook that you can then disseminate to the, you know, say it's a wellness program for all of their employees? And again, you've already created this content, so you're not having to invent anything else. It's not a lot of additional work, but now that content is going to be a revenue stream. It could be that you create a system or you create a course, and again, you can sell that, you can do that online, and once you set up your marketing, you can really have that run, I won't say entirely without you, but largely without you. So that's one part of it. The other part is by making sure that you can effectively delegate. So as I said, systems, teams, and assets. So team is an important part. And often when I'm speaking with clients who are really busy and who are just doing everything themselves, they know that they need to delegate, but there's a fear because it's like, this is my secret sauce. This is all the stuff that makes what I provide special. And I don't want to share it with people because I'm worried that they're going to use it to compete against me, or they're going to try to take away my clients. And so by using the law and using really clear, effective contracts, you can safeguard your content, you can safeguard your intellectual property, all of your brilliance, and still give people enough information and enough of your brilliance that they can work directly with your clients and customers, and they can do a lot of the work for you.
I love that. It's like, how can we take the things that spent so much time for us to develop, both from an IP perspective and just from the technicalities of doing it, and finding a capacity to move it forward, have a capacity for it to work on our behalf? Because so often when we're in that initial phase of building out that coaching business or that medical practice, we're the ones distributing all of our own content.
Exactly.
Right? I love this because it just, it forces people or it inspires people to start to be like, whoa, I can actually be leveraging this in a much bigger way.
Yes, that's it. I think one of the advantages of working with an experienced business lawyer is because we've seen so much and we've seen, like, I think one of my superpowers is seeing opportunities. And so often, you know, you, as you said, you create something and you think it can only be used in one way. And the advantage of working with someone is that we can show you lots of different ways that you can leverage the same asset.
Right. Can we talk about content creation for 1 second? Because sure. it's a situation that I see frequently where often it's practitioners, but it doesn't matter what business mm-hmm. we're talking about, where content is created alongside a partner.
Yes.
I love that. And you know, my general perspective on this has been like, if you don't need the partner to create the content, don't do it.
Yeah.
Or just pay them a flat rate for their time to contribute and have them sign off on the IP. But I would really love your perspective legally, because this isn't like a one-off issue that I hear. I hear this a lot. I'm going to form a partnership with this person and they're good at content and I'm good at content and it's going to pay us forever. And I actually haven't seen that work out so well. I'm really curious. I'm really curious what your experience is.
Yeah, I've had a similar experience. So partnerships... Look, when partnerships work out, they are brilliant because it's a way to go faster and further. But for the vast majority of people, you are better off paying someone to provide the part of the service that you need and you owning the intellectual property. And I liken it to, this often comes up to when people are starting up companies. And they're like, well, I don't want to take a loan, or I don't have the resources to pay someone, so I'm going to pay them in shares instead. So if you look at it as the thing that you're creating, and this is why it's important to understand the real value of what you're creating or the future value of what you're creating. If you're creating a company or if you're creating a piece of intellectual property that is going to be worth $100,000 in revenue, and you partner with someone 50-50, you've just given away $50,000. And maybe you could have gotten that skill, you could have gotten that service for $5,000. So now you've overpaid by $45,000. And I think if people actually put a value on what their proposed partner was contributing and what the value of the asset is, people would be less likely to rush into partnerships.
As you said that, when you're like, you could just pay them $5,000 or you could pay them $45,000. And then that's notwithstanding future revenue.
Exactly.
It was sort of a mic drop moment, certainly for me. And I think that there's an opportunity too, where I just want people to know, if you're sitting there going, well, I don't have $5,000. Great. There's also other ways of structuring how you can compensate that person into the future.
That's right. You can do a split of shares, right? You can give them a percentage of revenue. What you don't want to do, unless you really have to, is give up ownership.
Right. Ever.
Right? Ever. That should be absolutely, like, equity, essentially, is the most expensive way to finance anything. And again, particularly for women entrepreneurs, there is a hesitation or a reluctance to take on debt for business. Now, I'm not encouraging anyone to go put themselves in a lot of debt. However, sometimes that's the way to grow the business, right? Like, if the option is I'm going to allow someone to be a partner, even though what they're contributing is only worth a fraction of what the finished product is going to be worth, it may be better off to go borrow the $5,000 that you need to pay someone, and then you own all of the revenue that's going to come in. And some of it is confidence in your business idea, but, you know, business is about risk, and sometimes it's taking that risk. But having partners is expensive. The other thing is, quite often people will rush into partnerships and not really talk about the what-ifs, which is what lawyers excel at, right? But there are a lot of ways in which partnerships can go wrong. And in fact, 70% of business partnerships fail. which are not really good odds. And so if you go into something where you are essentially overpaying for the service, and then you leave yourself open to liability, because the other thing people don't think about with partnerships is, in a general partnership in Canada, you are 100% personally liable for the actions of your business partner with respect to the business. So if you go into a partnership with someone and they sign you up for a service that's going to cost $50,000 a year, you're like, what the hell? I didn't agree to that. Doesn't matter. You're in a general partnership. And if for whatever reason that contract was breached, someone can come after you personally. When I say personally, I mean all of your assets are at risk. So I think it's wonderful to have collaborations. And I think as women in particular, we're always looking for a way that everyone can rise and how we can work with others. That is wonderful. But I think people need to think about the risk involved in those types of relationships and understand, like, go in with eyes wide open if that's what you choose to do.
I think it's really sage advice, and especially for entrepreneurs in the earlier phases of their businesses. It often feels like a secure way of moving forward. And I really want people to hear that what you're saying between the lines is that collaboration is a really awesome opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I would argue, especially in the early phase of your entrepreneurial career, that's when you don't want to necessarily have partners, because you have so many routes and avenues and opportunities in front of you. But you can collaborate.
There's so many ways for you to grow when you're starting out, and you don't know kind of where your business is going to go. So you don't necessarily want to anchor yourself. Now, I've seen partnerships that have been wonderful and have blossomed. But those are people who really went into it with a very firm understanding of what they were getting themselves into. Right.
I want to reframe one thing you said in terms of that startup piece, because I'm not reframing what you said. I want to change our perspective on one of the words you said, which is you might want to take on some debt to run your business, which is a term we would use in business all the time. We would debt finance, and it's often better than having people take equity. But I want people to listen for this for 1 second, because I find debt a really triggering word. So if it was triggering for you when you're like, take on debt to build your business, and you're like, nope, my parents said never have debt, like pay off your credit cards, never do this. I want you to reframe it, because there's good debt and bad debt. The other way of looking at it is, and I'll just share a quick story on this, is it's really, I would reframe it and talk about debt to build your business as a commitment to bet on yourself.
That's it.
And that is all that is. And sure, you're not going to take out a $100,000 loan that you have no idea or plan to operate around. But $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 to get your business started, to take on that debt and to say, I have a solid idea. I've hired the right people to support me in the execution of that idea. And I am now choosing to bet on myself. That is a very, very powerful conversation to have.
It's empowering. So I took on... last year, for the first time in my business, I went to get a line of credit. It wasn't for a huge amount, but there were some things that I wanted to invest in. And I knew that in order to do it as I saw it in my head, I needed to have that facility. And I went back and forth about it, because, you know, the stories we tell ourselves again about debt and taking that on. But it really came down to what you said, which is, do I have confidence in myself that I can make this work? Am I making this decision on the basis of evidence, right? And I could see in my business that there was more demand than capacity, and I needed to build the capacity. And that sometimes you need to kind of build ahead of when you're ready. And that requires sometimes taking that leap of faith. But I have found that when you do that, you become really committed to making it work, right? You've got skin in the game. You know, I've created this system. You've created an obligation that you have to grow to fulfill. And, you know, it works. And I've seen it work with clients. So it's not, you know, something to take on lightly. And I understand. And I'm thank you for raising that point in terms of, for some people, it is triggering. And I've seen that. But it really is a commitment in your ability to make this work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just, I was like, I could hear some of our listeners being like, oh, my parents told me never the D word. And I was like, okay, new version of that word. Because not all debt is created equal. Just like not equally. All boyfriends are bad, right? So,
right?
Yeah. Okay, so I want to unpack this a little bit deeper, Andrea, this idea of how is it that lawyers actually really enable us to have more freedom in our lives? What are some of the mistakes that you see entrepreneurs make in an attempt to avoid the legal fee that actually just creates more distress and pain and really makes them fall out of love with their business?
Yeah. Do we have like a couple of days?
We actually have 4 days. This is a 4-day episode.
So I'll give you a little backstory. When I first started, just after articles, I started actually as a commercial litigator. And so I was in court. And one of the reasons why I built the practice that I have is because it was so frustrating to see people in court, relationships completely ruined, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars on the line, tens of thousands of dollars in legal fees, because someone hadn't explained something to them, hadn't just sat down and had a conversation for 20 minutes about whether this made sense or not. So what I would say is, regardless of what stage you're in your business, even if you don't actually retain a lawyer to do stuff for you, you should have a consultation with one. You should have someone who will look at where your business is, where you want it to go, what's the legal roadmap that you need to get there, and what are some of the risks that come up in your type of practice or in your type of business. Because once you've had that, when you're looking at opportunities now, hopefully you'll recall that conversation and you'll be able to look at it through that lens. So a lot of the problems come with people not reviewing contracts properly or not having contracts in place at all. But I've had clients where they've it seemed like a wonderful opportunity, say to be on a television program or a radio show, and in the fine print it's like, yeah, you give us the right to use these, you know, this video assets or whatever intellectual property assets. It's ours now. We can use it however we want. We can repackage it with no further payment to you. And so people have signed away really significant pieces of intellectual property because they didn't have the contract reviewed and they didn't really understand the terms in it. So I'd say not having contracts reviewed, not having contracts in place at all, doing things on just a handshake. And again, it's not because people are out to get you or people are inherently, you know, distrustful. It's just that as human beings, we communicate differently. And I may hear something in what you've said, or I infer something and I carry on with that understanding, and you had a completely different understanding. And because we didn't actually put it out in black and white and agree, we now have a dispute, right? Where had we been on the same page and set things out properly, we wouldn't have had one. The other thing is, and we touched on this a little bit earlier, just not really understanding the value of your intellectual property. Like we it's easy for us to look at a piece of real estate and be like, yeah, I bought it for $1 million. I feel that the market is going to go up. It's going to appreciate. It's easy for people because it's tangible. But when you underestimate the value of your intellectual property, sometimes your systems are intellectual property, right? The things that you've put together to make your business run more smoothly, that takes time and energy and experience, and people are willing to buy those. There's a lawyer in the States who has come up with really brilliant systems, and people spend tens of thousands of dollars to work with her just to put her systems in place. It's nothing to do with her legal work. It's just her systems, how she runs her business. So underestimating the value of what we have created with our minds, right, with our creative genius, is another huge mistake that I see people making. And then I think the third thing, or I've lost count now, but around
no, you're right, third.
How you own your business. So the question of whether to incorporate or not. And often people wait too late to incorporate, and one for liability reasons, but also for tax reasons. So December is always the busiest time of the year for my team. Because what happens is people that we had conversations with in February and March about incorporation go, oh, well, I'll see how it goes. And then they speak to their accountant in December and go, holy crap, I have to pay how much to CRA? And then we get a call, right? So ideally, you have that in place so you can take advantage of the tax flexibility ahead of making the money, right? So that you're not in a situation where you're trying to play catch up. And from a, this is slightly woo-woo for a lawyer, but incorporation I find makes a big difference from a mindset point of view. It's the same thing like taking on the line of credit or the financing for the business. It really makes you feel like a CEO, right? Like the business exists outside of you. It's not just a hobby. It's not just something you're trying your hand at. It's this actual own thing that you are now responsible for. And I can't tell you how many people I've worked with who've come back after and they're like, I don't know what happened, but like business has gone through the roof. We have so many more opportunities, you know, that have come and just come sometimes months after they've incorporated. And I really do think some of it is how people view you, but I really do think it makes a shift in how you view yourself and how you view your business. And I wish that people took that step and took the business really seriously earlier on.
There are so many times in the course of 2020 where I've had conversations with entrepreneurs and they're looking for, you know, how do I get out of this situation where I have no cash flow? We're facing this pandemic. My business is in disarray. And then they say, I'm not eligible for anything because I'm not incorporated. And it was disproportionately affecting women because women were disproportionately choosing not to take the steps towards incorporation. And there are certainly small costs associated with it. There's also a cost of doing business. So, you know, we can't go back and change those things. But I'm a huge proponent, just like you say, of saying, listen, like, let's level up your commitment to your business. Mm-hmm. Let's not be, you know, I'm not going to file taxes because I don't think I'm going to make $30,000 a year. I was like, oh, no, you're going to collect the HST and you're going to plan on that, because if you're not making $30,000 a year, why are we here?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And yeah, I had one client who actually called to say thank you, because in 2019, we'd have a conversation about incorporating and about a team member who she was considering an independent contractor. I was like, no, this person in the eyes of the law is an employee. You need to bring them on as an employee. And it was kind of those, fine, Andrea, like, I don't really want to do this, but since but since you're insistent. And she called me to say thanks because she was eligible for the loan because of those two decisions. She decided to incorporate and she put the person on payroll.
Right. Right.
Right. So, and as you said, you can't go backwards, but this is a kind of a lesson that other people will only take our business as seriously as we take it.
Mm-hmm. I hope everyone heard that. I hope everyone heard that. Right. When you are first starting out, when it's your first 6 months out of school, you're in bootstrap mode, right? Mm-hmm. You are like, okay, I'm going to do every free seminar I can do on this, and I'm going to pick up what I can do here. But when you transition, you're like, okay, I'm a business owner and I'm putting on my business owner hat and I'm a CEO. You really do have to recognize there's a cost to doing business. There is a time and place where you're going to have to invest in the services that help you play a bigger game and protect you in the bigger game arena.
That's it.
And that's really what we're talking about.
Yeah. I did my master's in business and tax law a few years ago. And I remember being in the classes going, this is why wealthy people stay wealthy and become wealthier, because they invest in professional advice, because they understand that the $1,000 that they've paid the lawyer or the accountant will, in the grand scheme of things, make them hundreds of times over. Right? Like a little thing like, if you're building your practice up, again, with incorporation, if you're building your practice up and you think, I'm going to have a multidisciplinary practice, I'm going to have some courses, I'm going to put, and I'm building this up so that I can sell it. Having a conversation with a lawyer or an accountant about how to structure that can save you literally millions of dollars in capital gains tax. Because when you sell a business, the same way when you sell a house, there is capital gains on the increase in value, right? So if you start your business with $1,000 in a laptop and you sell it for $1 million, the government wants their cut on all of the increase.
Bless them.
But if you sell the shares of a Canadian private corporation, you get a per shareholder exemption of $864,000 plus. It goes up every year. Right? So just by that one conversation and that one investment, so you've paid, you know, a couple thousand to incorporate, but you save $400,000 when you sell your business later on. Like, it's a huge return on investment. So I understand it's not the thing. I have a client who said once, you know, paying for legal and financial and accounting services is like fixing the roof on your house when you really want to go buy the new Louboutins, right? She's like, it's not fun, but it's necessary, because if you leave the hole in your roof unfixed, the rain's going to come in and destroy all the nice shoes that you've bought.
Right.
As you said.
Right. I mean, yeah. I think one, it's a really great example. You don't get this massive dopamine hit when you're like, oh man, I just paid my legal bill.
Yeah.
But I say this to entrepreneurs all the time. I was like, if there's one thing you should invest in right off the bat, I always get them to invest in a bookkeeper first.
Absolutely. First thing.
Because you see that ROI immediately.
Yes.
And that also just, it also puts you into this mindset of, oh, I pay professionals for my for where I don't necessarily have acumen. And you may not say this because I heard you already say mindset in the context of incorporation, and you use the word woo. But yeah. I will say that I think it's really important, from, like I said, from a mindset perspective, that one, we're willing to make these investment pieces. And if you have a professional service, but you are constantly trying to avoid ever paying for professional services, mm-hmm. there's a massive karmic disconnect yes. in what Absolutely. You are putting out into the universe.
Yes, thank you for saying that. It's true. If we want people to pay us and value our services, but we don't do that for others, it's not going to work out so well.
It's not going to work out so well. There are certain symptoms of situations where people are caught never being able to progress in their businesses.
Yeah.
And that I find is a consistent one, an unwillingness to ever pay for things. And I get it. Mm. There's this catch 22. But one of the things I love about the innovation that you've brought to your business, I say this all the time, it's not about lowering your fees, it's about innovating your offering. Mm-hmm. I'd love for you to just share a little bit about how you've taken some of your IP and how you've packaged that out, because I think it's so brilliant and it makes what you do as a lawyer accessible to people who are like, listen, I can't pay an hourly fee, but I value what it is that you bring to the table.
Yes. So early this year, we launched the Secure Startup, which is done for you, customizable templates for Canadian entrepreneurs. And I had fought against it for a while because I wasn't a huge fan of templates, but exactly what you said, people were coming who needed the help, but were like, listen, I value your service. I think it's fairly priced. I just am not at the position to invest at that level. What can you help me with? And I felt like my hands were tied. And then I had clients who came and said, well, I bought this from an American site because that's all that was available, right? There was nothing available for Canadian entrepreneurs. And of course, American law is different from Canadian law, and it doesn't work to just copy and paste from an American site. And so it became really important. And then the ones that were on the market at a low cost, there was no opportunity for customization. There was no guidance as to what type of contract you needed, when you should use it, how to make sure it stands up in court. How can you like, our businesses are unique, right? Two coaching businesses may have a completely different business model. And so their contracts and their legal structure needs to reflect the differences in that model. And so the Secure Startup is kind of my brain in a box, right? And it includes guides. It's specific to different industries. So for example, we have one for Ontario naturopaths, because I thought that it was important to provide something at an entry point in terms of price, but that still worked for the uniqueness of your industry.
So cool.
That was really important to me. And then, you know, we as I said, we put a lot into legal guides so that you understand how to use them. you know, questions in on the actual templates to help you decide which clauses you need, if you needed to take something out, where you might need to make tweaks for your specific business. Because it's in the details, right? The contracts are about clarity and lack of room for misunderstanding. And those are in the details. And if you copy and paste from someone who looks like they're doing something similar, but you don't understand some of the intricacies of their business, you could really miss something. So I'll give a quick example. I worked with a client who is in the healthcare field, but was doing, was writing books and was doing publishing, and was working with another publisher, and that publisher had provided a contract saying, with a normal non-compete clause, non-solicit clause, which says you can't solicit any of our employees to work with you after you're no longer working with us. And for someone who had employees and who had that business model, that would make sense. For a lot of publishing companies, their employees, run the business and provide the services to their clients. But this person's business had no employees. And all of the other people who were involved in the co-publishing of the book were independent contractors. And so when they all decided to get together and essentially compete against them, lawyers sent out, cease and desist, but they didn't have any ground to stand on, because the clause, which had been taken from some generic site, didn't reflect what their business did. And this person lost half of their business.
Wow. Wow.
Right, for the sake of a contract.
And there you have it, folks. That is where your peace of mind and your capacity to grow and your ability to vision and be a visionary and impact is going to be tied to your ability to find the right advice from the right people. Andrea, I feel like this is a perfect place to transition our interview to something I call our KPIs, or key performance indicators. So just like we have them in our business, I believe we have them in how we live our life as well. So I've got some quick questions for you.
All right.
Are you ready?
I'm ready, I think.
I know. I asked this to everybody. Someone asked this to me on a podcast the other day. They're like, I've got rapid fire questions. And I was like, oh, I'm surprisingly anxious. Despite the fact that I do this to everyone. So first question for you, what's the most impactful book or conversation that you have read or had during the pandemic?
During the pandemic? I had a conversation with Hina Khan, who is a mindset coach. And one of the things that she said was, outside circumstances do not impact my dreams. And I was like, ooh. And so she was basically like, because I, at the beginning of the pandemic, had a little freak out. Like, I work only with small businesses. And everything that you were reading on the news was like, this is the end of all small businesses. No small businesses will exist during this pandemic. And so I was a little concerned. She's like, nope. Stop paying attention to what's going on outside. Focus on what it is that you want. Focus on providing really good service to your clients, and just to some extent ignore—not ignore that you don't know what's going on, but make a determination that what's going on outside does not impact on your desires and on your dreams. And that has made a world of difference.
That's amazing. What is the thing that you are most consistent with respect to your health?
Sleep.
Good
so
job.
I make sure that I have at least 7 hours of sleep a night, 8 on weekends, and I have actually canceled client meetings if I didn't have a good night's sleep to make sure that I've gotten those 7 hours.
You're doing better than most of the naturopaths I know, so well played. What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
Something totally badass about me. Not otherwise now. My first and second, so I had a C-section for my middle kid, but my first and third births were totally unmedicated.
Wow, that is badass. Yeah. I've been there with you, sister, and I'm like, yep, not much can hit that. What do you do for fun or play?
I love reading. I've always been a bit of a book nerd. So reading is my number one thing. I also love to travel. I have not been able to do it this year, but I love traveling.
Yes, store that one up. And yes. Finally, entrepreneurism. Are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I think we can learn it. I really do. When I was growing up, it never crossed my mind to be an entrepreneur. Really, my entrepreneurship was born of circumstances where it just became really evident that the job that I wanted didn't exist, and so I would need to create it for myself. But I think I learned it, both from reading and attending seminars and conferences. Mentorship and coaching is a huge part of learning how to do it. And early on in my career, I spent what some people would think was a disproportionate amount of an investment in coaching, but it has paid such dividends because I didn't know what I was doing. I knew how to be a good lawyer. I did not know how to run a law firm, I didn't know how to run a business.
Right.
I didn't understand, understanding who your client was. I didn't understand how to manage money, like none of that. And had I not invested in coaching, I think I would have eventually gotten there, but it would have taken much longer and a lot more mistakes. So I was able to shortcut a lot of things by speaking to people who knew what they were doing, who had done it themselves, who had worked with others. And so I think especially in the early stages of your career, an investment in coaching is huge. And I think that's how you can learn entrepreneurship.
Absolutely. Sage advice. Andrea Henry, where do we send people to learn more about the work that you're doing in this world?
So I hang out a lot on Instagram at Henry Business Law. And if you are interested in those done for you Canadian templates, they're at thesecurestartup.ca.
Fantastic. Andrea, thanks so much for being here.
It's been a pleasure as usual.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Anthropology is the study and science of what makes entrepreneurs tick. It's the confluence of the mindset, strategic thinking, and health that we bring to the table as contributors, as purpose seekers, as individuals building out a better tomorrow. The work that we do on the Anthropology podcast impacts the mindset, the business tactics, and the health of those individuals who are working hard to change the world, to leave a legacy for the future. The best way that we can reach more people with the message of the Anthropology podcast is if you help us share it. If the message that we shared in today's episode is something that resonates with you, or if you know someone who would benefit from hearing it, please send it to them directly. And if you have felt moved by the content that we have shared, I would love it if you could leave a review wherever it is that you pick up your podcast. Until next week, live life on, in, and with purpose. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker, and I will talk to you real soon.